Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll keep following the Japan crisis, including the nuclear power plant situation now. Some of the latest on that is that Japanese authorities are telling people to remain calm, but warning those near the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant to seal themselves indoors. Officials now say a fire in a storage pond for spent fuel at the plant's Unit 4 reactor released radioactivity, quote, directly into the atmosphere. That fire was extinguished and radiation levels had dropped dramatically, but officials say the pond might still be boiling, and they're asking the U.S. and Japanese militaries to help by having helicopters spray water on it. Experts say the radiation appears to have been in steam produced by the boiling water and was not emitted directly by the fuel rods, which would have been far more virulent. So let's get a take on this from Margaret Harding, former vice president of engineering quality for General Electric. She worked on reactor models in use in Japan. Today she's a consultant. Ms. Harding, thank you so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Well, thank you very much. I'd really like to open first by saying our hearts, I'm mainly representing the American Nuclear Society, and our hearts really go out to the people in Japan that have suffered this terrible event. I lived through Loma Prieta. I lived in California then. I cannot imagine an earthquake of this magnitude and how terrifying that was and the damage that's been done. And just want to open with that.
Indeed, and I'm sure you speak for all Americans when you say that as well. What was your role in designing what kind of plant, how similar or exactly what they're using at Fukushima?
Yeah, my real main expertise is in the fuel and core designs. That's what I worked on. I worked with the groups and worked on doing analysis of completed designs. I didn't design the systems in these plants, but rather we, on a very regular basis, re-examined the designs based on more improved methodologies, changing situations at the plants as they change out and upgrade equipment. And so I both did perform some of those analysis and managed the groups that did a lot of that analysis. And I'm
so very familiar
with the systems themselves.
So are you shocked now that you're seeing what
turns out
to be possible inside the core?
It's always been a known that at some point you can only design, you know, people are only so smart, right? They can only consider what they know to consider. So there was always in the minds of the designers of these plants the idea that we would put in ultimate fail-safes like the combination of the reactor vessel and the core and the containment, and that if all else failed, those would continue to contain the core and all of the stuff that goes with it. In the end, those systems have worked here. It's a testament to the designers from 40 years ago that a system designed back in the 60s has done as well as it has under these incredible circumstances. That said, it's been hard to watch. An industry I've worked in and loved for a long time, it's hard to watch these things happen.
How did designers originally test for earthquake resistance or, for that matter, tsunami resistance?
For earthquake resistance, they specifically do a seismic design where they use, obviously, computer software to come up with how they think it's going to work. But then they also have to put that equipment through what's called a shaker table test, where they actually simulate the earthquake forces that would occur on the plant. That's why these plants were still standing and didn't just crumble in this earthquake. There were physical tests of all of the components that went into them.
One of the success stories until last night had been the containment vessels, because they had held. So even if there was a meltdown in the core or a partial meltdown, the containment vessels were holding, so there weren't high levels of radiation getting out into the public.
Right.
Now one of the containment vessels seems to have been breached as of yesterday. How serious a development do you consider that to be?
That is serious. I don't have on-the-ground facts on that. I've been watching very closely the TEPCO press releases and the Nuclear and Industrial Safety Administration in Japan's press releases. Clearly, they're concentrating on the plant, so sometimes those lag. And they haven't stated exactly what's going on at Unit 2, so I'm not going to speculate a lot. But if the Taurus is breached, this is not a good thing. I certainly would want a lot more information before I start speculating a lot about what that exactly means, because we don't know what that looks like and whether it, you know, how significant it is.
What could it mean? What's the range of possibilities there?
Well, you know, the range of possibilities, it could be that it's a very slight crack that's occurred that is almost self-sealing, so you got a little puff of radiation and it seals back up and we're fine. Obviously, it goes up from there, and I'm not even going to start that because I have a standing policy that I do not spread fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Well, what about from radiation levels that we do know about? For example, Tokyo, about 170 miles away, has reported slightly elevated radiation levels, but officials say the increase was too small to be a threat. I mentioned earlier that after the problem at Reactor 4, there had been a spike in radiation levels, but then it had seemed to come down. What's your understanding of why that would happen?
Well, let's talk first about the spike. If I understand the situation right, we know that there was a fire near or in the spent fuel storage pool of Unit 4. I've seen lots of speculation as to what caused that fire. Nothing official, so I'm not going to speculate on that. Presuming that it had some effect on the water in the pool and the spent fuel was temporarily uncovered, you would get what we sometimes call a puff of radiation from that fuel. That is in the reactor building. You know, I think you probably understand by now there's sort of three layers of building or container going on here.
Mm-hmm.
There's the vessel, there's the containment, and then there's this, what's sometimes called the reactor building. The spent fuel pool is in the reactor building, and that vents directly out to the outside air. Normally, the pool is covered with 30 feet of water. I've stood over the top of spent fuel pools looking at what is actually a very beautiful blue glow. With no fear of radiation. So the only way radiation escaped the spent fuel pool is if somehow the water level was lowered to the top of the spent fuel.
And with respect to Tokyo, 170 miles away, reporting slightly elevated.
Yeah, that's not clear to me what's going on there. I don't know meteorology to know why anything would be headed that direction. It is far enough away, and the isotopes involved are fairly volatile, so you might get some small contamination traveling toward Tokyo, or someone may have carried it and it was detected. I really don't know. And if I were living in Tokyo today, I would not be concerned. I would be out walking around.
One troubling reading that we heard was 400 millisieverts per hour. That's the measure used, enough to cause radiation sickness in a few hours in workers exposed. But still in all, we are told no radiation release to this point is believed to threaten the health of the general public. If it doesn't get worse, what do you think the public impact? I mean, we know Chernobyl was much, much worse and resulted in tens of thousands of cancer deaths, probably.
I'm not going to accept that. But
you're not going to accept that? Okay.
No.
What number would you project based on what we know today about releases that have already been made?
What we know today is that they're on the order of what it's very similar to Three Mile Island in terms of the what I'll call the fence line release. It's maybe a little higher based on what I'm reading. I don't have the exact numbers from Three Mile Island, so I can't do a one-for-one comparison. But we're talking of numbers on the order of what you would receive getting a CAT scan or getting other diagnostic x-rays done over the course of your lifetime. So you have those done without fear. I believe that there's no fear that there's an increase in radiation here. Remember that workers in nuclear power plants are allowed to pick up as much as 5 REMs or 50. I got to get my numbers straight because I don't want to misquote myself. Or hang on. Because I want to convert from millisieverts to REM.
And while you're looking that up, I'm looking at a BBC Chernobyl article that says, more in your direction, almost 2,000 cases of thyroid cancer have resulted from the reactor explosion at the Ukrainian power station. That was after 15 years, and that was considered the biggest group of cancers ever from a single incident. And BBC says 2,000.
Okay, and the World Health Organization doesn't confirm those numbers. World Health Organization says as many as 4,000. Okay, I take that back. The World Health Organization says as many as 4,000. Thyroid cancer is one of the most treatable cancers on the planet. Very few people die from it. So, yes, may have happened. One of the real problems with that area of Ukraine is we don't have much data from before, so we don't know what the Delta is. But let's not argue about Chernobyl. We know that that was a terrible event. I am not going to argue that Chernobyl wasn't just horrendously and horrifically a bad thing to have happen. So let's stay focused on this one.
So what do you think should happen elsewhere, including here? You know, in the New York area, people are starting to debate Oyster Creek in New Jersey, the oldest power plant in New Jersey, which I think is scheduled to shut down anyway in 2019. Governor Cuomo in New York and Attorney General Schneiderman ran last fall on shutting down Indian Point. We hear today from Germany that Chancellor Merkel announced that the seven oldest nuclear power plants there would all provisionally be shut down. Do you, as somebody from the industry, think that all these governments are overreacting?
I do. I look at the gas explosions that have occurred at operating gas plants that have killed dozens of people. I look at the effect of the coal industry and the people who die from the pollution of coal, and I look at the overall safety of the nuclear industry, even including Chernobyl, on a worldwide basis, is still far safer than any other power source we have when we take those measurements. So, yeah, it's not a pretty thing, but planes crash and we don't shut down the airline industry. Let's keep a scale on what we're looking at. It's a shame to say we're scared, so we're going to shut it down, and we're not going to try to understand what's happening and get smarter. In other industries, we watch, how many workers die at Macondo and how much effect on New Orleans, and yet they're still drilling in the Gulf.
Last thing, Tom Cochran, environmentalist, nuclear expert for the environmental group NRDC, said on NPR both the cooling and backup proved far more vulnerable than plant designers predicted in this case, and it should be a lesson about the limits of being able to design against nature. Your reaction to that?
And the answer is that nobody can outsmart Mother Nature, but every time we learn something, we try to protect ourselves against it, and we still need to look at the overall risk with and without and what the replacement cost and risk would be. And I think when you do that equation rationally and you look at the impacts of all forms of energy generation, none of them are perfect, and look at the true risk and the true happenings in the environment with all of these various kinds of methods, you'll find that nuclear is at least as good as, if not better than, many in terms of its safety record. And in fact, we in the nuclear industry work really hard that every time something happens at any plant, including anything overseas, we look at what happened once we understand, and we make changes to what we've got in our current plants to try to make them that much safer. For example, we know now that one of the big problems there was that their fuel tanks got washed away in the tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
Our fuel tanks here, partially post 9/11, are all underground, or at least as far as I know, at the plants are now underground where they wouldn't be affected by a hurricane or a tsunami. And you have to bear in mind, you got to look at the risks for the plant where it's located. Worrying about a huge earthquake at a plant in the center of Georgia is kind of silly. You would worry about the potential earthquake there, but you shouldn't be worrying about a 10.0 at that plant site. There, you worry about what's happening there, right?
Margaret Harding, former vice president of engineering quality for General Electric. She worked on reactor models in use in Japan. Today she's a consultant. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we'll finish up in a minute for today with social critic Kay Heimowitz on her new book, Manning Up: How the Rise of Women Has Turned Men into Boys. We will hear her broad critique of a phase of life that she calls pre-adulthood coming up.